The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
According to the Environmental Working Group, babies are being born now with as many as 300 industrial chemicals in their bodies. They also have researched, and they've said that we women are exposed to over 160 chemicals a day just through our personal care products. Now, men, it's different. They're exposed to about half that many because they use about half as many personal care products as we women do. The Environmental Working Group also tested 10 different people, and this was in 2004, and they found 287 chemicals in those 10 people, with an average of 200 chemicals in each person. But now, what was so shocking is they found 212 industrial chemicals and pesticides in these people that had been banned over 30 years ago. And since 1950, according to the book by Needleman and Landrigan called Raising Children Toxic Free, they say since 1950, at least 70,000 new chemical compounds have been invented and dispersed in our environment. I'm going to be talking today with Olive Kaiser. She is a mother of seven and an avid researcher in health and nutrition. And we're going to be discussing toxins today and how they're destroying our lives and our health. And she has a website, theglutensyndrome.net. What I want to start off with, you have a quote on your site, and you have this in your emails, and I really like this quote. It's called, "Our future children's bodies are sitting on our dinner plates today." Explain what you mean by that.
Well, actually, this is something I came up with some time ago as I was just processing through all this information that I was picking up. And I just realized that if we moms and dads have all these chemicals in our bodies and the placental wall is being breached, actually, we know they're being breached by pesticides because of the additives that they put in the pesticides that cause them to be better absorbed and to cross these barriers.
They feel like these chemicals are cumulative too, aren't they?
Right. They're adding up in our bodies. They may be in really small quantities when we take them in each bite, but they're adding up. And part of the reason is our fat tends to absorb it, and also some of us don't seem to filter them back out as well as we should. Mm-hmm. And that may be genetic, and it may be partly just that our detox pathways are not working well.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about that here in just a little bit also, but go ahead.
Right. Well, it just means that whatever we're putting into our bodies is literally going down to the next generation through the placental wall, and I suppose also in the sperm. But at any rate, it's not good for the babies. And so what we are doing today, especially our children and young people, are going to go down to their children. And what my mom put in her body before I was conceived, what I did the same with my children before I had my children, they got a lot of that.
A lot of them babies now are being born, you know, like I just said, there's as many as 300 chemicals in their bodies. And you say, you have mentioned that what we do affects the next seven generations. Explain that.
Well, I think you'll see that quote on one of the paper companies at Whole Foods. They have a seventh generation line of cleaners and paper towels and so on. And they're quoting, apparently an old Indian quote, that what we do today does affect the next seven generations. And I think that might include the toxins that actually go down, the emotions. There may be spiritual implications that are being passed from generation to generation. And the Indians apparently used to believe that it took about seven generations for an exposure of some sort to just sort of not be so significant to the generations, you know, coming down the line.
That's so in other words, the damage and the harm that we do and that affects us, it's basically passed down through the genes. And, of course, they've done some recent research about cellular memories, and all of that is passed down. And then you've got the energetic aspect of it also that's also passed down. So, yeah.
Well, okay. And there's also just simply the nature versus nurture, the nurture part, how we behave and raise our children makes a difference as well. So that's just one more piece. But now they're finding out that some of the mutations that are happening during people's lifetime by these chemicals and toxins, especially through the male germline, are being passed down to the next generation. I think in the research, they went down four generations and it was still being passed on. So
wow.
That's pretty troubling as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, what do you think are the most dangerous toxins in our environment today? I mean, we have so many, you know, to me, it'd be kind of hard to choose, but do you have specific toxin on your list that you think is just red alert, just worse than the other ones, or do you?
Well, like you say, it's pretty hard to choose. Certainly heavy metals are a big deal. One of the first things I mention to people when they come and ask me, what should I do first? I'll just say, if it was me, I would cut out the genetically modified foods first, mm-hmm. because they are full of pesticides. They are in all our processed foods, practically. And there's not only the possible effects of the genetic modification process going on, but there's also a ton of chemicals going on those plants. So that's the first thing that I point to, but I also am very concerned about, within that group of pesticides, for instance, I'm very concerned about the endocrine disruptors, because that is affecting things that we are dealing with in such high quantities today, more than we used to: breast cancer, osteoporosis, dementia, and also gender bender issues as well, which
right.
really troubles me.
Yeah.
I think it troubles a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, I think so,
or
too.
Gender-altering issues, maybe that would be a better term.
It's basically changing who we are.
It is.
In a sense.
It is, and that is very upsetting.
Yeah, it is.
And it's avoidable to some degree.
To some degree, yeah, I agree. Okay, well, Olive, we're about to go to break, but before we do, I want to mention that we've got something very excited with the, of course, this podcast, The Misdiagnosed Life. We're on the America Out Loud Network, which is a podcast network. I think everybody knows that. But America Out Loud has just come out with a free iPhone app. And we're so excited, very excited about it. It's super easy to use. And all you have to do is just open it up and, you know, click on the podcast you want to listen to, and you listen to it on your iPhone. So I want to encourage everybody to go to, you can either go to AmericaOutLoud.com, download, or you can go to the App Store and get the app and put it on your iPhone, and it'll make listening to these podcasts so much easier. And I think you'll love using it. I do. And again, it's simple to use. And with me being a non-techie person, you know, when something is simple, I really appreciate it. You know, I think sometimes that, you know, the computer's out to get me sometimes. So when I find something that's simple to use, I'm really thrilled with it. So just go to the App Store and download the AmericaOutLoud.com. You can go there too. But the America Out Loud iPhone app, and you can listen real easily over your iPhone to these podcasts. So we're going to break, and we'll be right back. Okay, I'm here today with Olive Kaiser. She's a mother of seven and an extensively informed and very smart lady. And we're talking about toxins in our environment and the problems they're causing. And before we took the break, she was telling me, I'd ask her about what she thought some of the most dangerous toxins were. And of course, there are very many. There's a lot of them. But one of the first things she said she would do would be to get the GMOs out of the diet of her and her family. And I wanted to also ask and cover some of the basic foundational principles of health. And now, as far as these toxins are concerned, and we've talked about this before the show, there's some things there's some very concerning things that's happening to our bodies. I wanted to ask you, Olive, what are these toxins doing to our bodies? Now, you have said, and it's been proven, it's been shown in the research and all, that we're getting overtoxified and our immune system is going down. Now, talk a little bit about the detox pathways and our digestive system and what is happening to our bodies, mainly as a result of these toxins.
Well, I'd like to just also mention again that one reason why I like to encourage folks to avoid the GMOs is partly the process that seems to be troubling a lot of researchers, but also the extreme amount of pesticides and herbicides that are going on these crops. And sometimes they're actually being sprayed on the crops just before they're harvested, and that they can't be washed off. So the pesticides are a very big deal. And what they're finding out with, let's say, for instance, atrazine and Roundup and chemicals like that, is that, number one, they're disrupting the endocrine system, which affects all of our glands, our hormones, bone building, breast cancer, a lot of other problems like that. But they're also stealing enzymes. Well, they're actually making enzymes unavailable. It's called chelating. So they can't work. And a lot of, they're chelating the minerals in the enzymes. And the enzymes are the workers in the body.
Right, because nothing can happen. Nothing can happen without enzymes. I mean, if we run out of enzymes, we die.
Right. I think that's fairly well established. But there's often minerals in those enzymes that are kind of making them work themselves. And when we make those minerals unavailable, then the enzymes are kind of dead in the water. And then they don't do the work they're supposed to do. And you can end up with many, many, many different problems as a result of enzymes that aren't working. And so that, again, affects the endocrine system. It affects just about
everything.
And certainly the digestive system is a very key part of our health and our mental health.
And, of course, that's where 80%, they say, of our immune system is in the digestive, is in the gut, you know, too.
That's correct. And so when the gut is down, you really, really have problems. And that is where a lot of our food intolerances are coming from. It's setting a really bad environment for parasites and infections to thrive. And we're having funguses and a lot of just strange infections that we don't even know what some of them are.
Which is going to cause more inflammation, and that's going to cause it's going to tax the immune system even more. And
right.
It's just going to be a downward spiral.
Absolutely. When the immune system can't deal with these infections and onslaughts, then you have a chronic condition that just sets up, it's a vicious cycle. It sets up so many more vicious cycles that can be rather hard to get out of. And then you have autoimmunity starting because the gut wall becomes too permeable from inflammation, and you have food coming through the gut wall and getting into the bloodstream, and that causes a lot of autoimmune problems, and that can also affect the brain, cause neuropsychiatric issues as well as many, many other neurological issues, MS, and other problems that we do not want.
Yeah, and it's not only the integrity of the gut wall that can get damaged, but the blood-brain barrier can also get damaged.
And the placental barrier.
Right, and things can pass from one to the other. Things can get in. I've seen PET scans, and things can get in the brain that's never supposed to be there. And you talk about neurological problems, they can be off the chart, you know.
Well, when I was a little girl in the 50s, I hardly knew what bipolar was. I didn't know what manic depressive, I'd never heard that term. And we've all heard that term now, and a lot of other neuropsychiatric illnesses such as schizophrenia and dementia, Alzheimer's, we've always had forgetfulness in old age. I wouldn't be too surprised to believe that. But the Alzheimer's and the gluten-related dementias and autism that we're having today, and then some things that are just simply ADD, for instance. It's a neuropsychiatric illness, and at least it seems that way in my family. And so all of these conditions were things that when I was a little girl, if they were getting started, they weren't enough to be noticed as much in society as
right.
They are now.
You rarely heard of them. Yeah, I mean, you rarely heard of these.
I think they were coming, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't to the point where we were really getting our attention on it, and now it's overwhelming.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
It's really scary. As a matter of fact, the prediction on autism is that if the numbers continue as they are now, we'll have 1 in 2 children with autism by 2032.
And that's outrageous.
And that's not workable.
It's not.
We won't be a country at that point.
Yeah. Now, you also say you go to, you're a member of the Autism One Foundation, and you go to their conferences that they have and all. Tell us a little bit about, because you say we're getting, you know, well, this is two different things, but you say that the autism, you had mentioned the other day, autism is just a set of symptoms that is affecting, it depends on the age. In other words, there's fundamental underlying health issues that are causing these problems, and it's called autism in children. It may be called, fibromyalgia in an adult. Explain that process.
Well, it's the basic process that is similar. Let's put it that way.
Right.
When the immune system, when a person is overtoxified and they can't get the toxins out appropriately, and their immune system eventually goes down. I sort of call it going over the cliff, and I think practically all of our children are dancing on the edge of that cliff.
I do too.
Most of them anyway. Too close, in my estimation. When someone goes over the cliff and their immune system goes down and it just can't deal with these things anymore, all of a sudden you go from maybe a child who looks perfectly normal to someone who's completely off the cliff. And it may not be autism. It might be some other serious disease like cancer or something like that. But the general understanding in the autism community is that the same similar processes, basically overtoxification and crash of the immune system, in a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old, it might be autism. In a 23-year-old, it might be lupus. In a 43-year-old, it might be fibromyalgia. In an 83-year-old, it might be Alzheimer's, and many other similar diseases. A lot depends on what tissue is being compromised by the process. If you've got a problem with your thyroid, you're going to have problems that thyroid's caused. If you have a problem with your brain, it'll be more neuropsychiatric or something motor.
Yeah, it's going to affect the weaker link first, where your weaker area is.
It's going to affect the weaker link. That's correct. So that's kind of the idea that we have in the autism community, is that really, and that's one reason why I went into looking into autism, not only because we have it, early stages of it in our family, but because if you understand what's going on in autism, you have a pretty good handle on what's happening in health today. Not everything, of course, but it really gives you a clue. And so that's one reason why I've stayed with the autism community, partly because we are dealing with it in our own family as well. But it gives you such a broad perspective of what's going on in health today.
Yeah. And, we're getting, and I've talked to other people, and I mentioned it on this show, and others agree with me. Everybody's agreeing with me. And it's scary, but we're getting sicker and sicker. And I know you've talked before, and you agree with, that analysis also. We're so sick today. We're getting weaker. We're getting more toxic. As we've talked about, the detox pathways are down, and our digestive system is messed up, which is hampering our immune system. Our immune system's going down. I mean, it's a scary thought, but we as a society, we're dying. I mean, we're dying at a much rapid rate. We're not on the normal path of dying. We're on an accelerated path of dying. And that's what it amounts to. And unless we wake up as a society and start turning this around, I mean, we're going to be in major trouble. I mean, I think we already are, but it's going to get worse. It's like you said, autistic kids, 1 out of 2 one day? That's outrageous.
In 15 years. That's really scary. Well, there is, from what I hear from the researchers that I listen to, they say that this generation is not expected to live as long as their parents.
I've heard that too.
And it is, right. I've also heard people say, well, but life expectancies are longer today and that people are living longer. And I haven't really done a ton of research on that. I know there has been some research done, but in some ways we may have more older people than it used to be. In the old days, they didn't have 911. They had a lot of infectious diseases and sometimes not the nutrition to deal with it. With a lot of the problems they had, they didn't have ambulances. There were a lot of reasons why people died for other reasons back then. But long story short, we're not as healthy as we used to be.
No, that's what I was going to say. The quality
of life. Our old people are not necessarily healthy. And I think you look at some folks, my husband has an aunt who just had her 105th birthday. Happy birthday, Aunt Dorothy. But, she had a really cheerful attitude, too, and I'll give her credit for that. I think that might have helped her out. I think God has given her a long life, and she's been she's used it well, and many other people like her. But that's not happening to most people in today's society. A lot of people are sick and in pain long before they get to be old, and the children, in particular are just not as healthy as they used to be. I saw a picture recently of a wall in a nurse's office in a school. The school nurse. It was a wall of little pockets with all the EpiPens in them. I didn't know what an EpiPen was when I was a child.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that.
There's something very wrong with that.
And that's just one thing. I mean, we could go over many other examples of children that just aren't healthy. And I think most of us realize, that are in the older category realize that the children today are not as healthy. They're not as strong.
I feel like my generation is
different.
Not as healthy as the previous generation. I think generation.
No, we weren't.
And we've talked about, and then there's a report, the Pottinger report. Go over that. With let's talk about that for a little bit, because he did research on, and I think it's with the toxins in the food, basically, and of course the EMFs and all that that's killing us, but he did a research on some cats. Talk about that.
Dr. Pottinger did some really good research. He was running a TB clinic. He was an MD. He was one of the first MDs to deal with smog in LA, for instance. He was a very reputable fellow and worked with other researchers in the area. But he had been working on an adrenal extract for his TB patients, and he was using cats to experiment on. And he would go in and yank out their adrenals with surgery, and then he'd give them his adrenal extract to see how well it worked. And then a butcher donated some meat to his research project, and it was raw meat scraps, and they started feeding it to the cats, and all of a sudden they started living through his surgeries better. And he got interested in that and put together some very well done research, a research project that lasted about 10 years. And basically they only got three different foods. They got cod liver oil, they all got cod liver oil. And then they got meat and they got milk. And so some of the cats were just fed these three things in the raw form, and some were given cooked meat and milk in all different forms. They experimented with raw milk, with sweetened condensed milk, evaporated milk, pasteurized milk. They even experimented with the feet of the animals that were producing the milk. And the interesting thing about his research is that it wasn't just 3 months, which is often what happens today in research, but this was over 10 years. And so they were able to see a lot of generations of the cats. And it, as the generations went on, that's when the health effects showed up. Now, the ones who were eating the raw diet, the raw meat, which is what a cat normally eats in the wild, they don't cook their mice before they eat them. And so they just went on as usual. They were friendly. They were strong. They won the cat fights in the cages. They reproduced well. And all seemed to be well with them. But the other cats, as the generations went on, they got anxious. They got their actual skeleton changed. Their faces got narrower, and their bones got longer and thinner. There was one line of cats where actually the bone around their eyes, I think they call it the orbital bone or something,
right,
it didn't even fill in properly. When they climbed on the fences in their cages, surrounding their cages, they couldn't come down sometimes because they couldn't retract their claws. But what really bothered, and also their reproduction really started to go down. They had trouble reproducing. The kittens weren't healthy. They didn't all live.
And these were cats on a cooked diet.
It was a cooked meat and pasteurized milk of all kinds.
Okay.
Different types of pasteurized
okay.
milk. But of course, they were using different feeds as well to try to deal with the feeds. But the most troubling aspect to me of all that, and it's all troubling, was that the female cats started to become more male-looking and more male-acting. They became more dominant. The male cats became more subservient and more female-looking in their build. And there was one line of cats that got sweetened condensed milk and cooked meat and the cod liver oil. And by the third generation, the kittens did not live to maturity. None of them
wow.
did.
Wow.
Or the parents couldn't have them at all. And that is scary.
So in other words, they became sterile.
they either became infertile, sterile, they couldn't have their babies, or the babies didn't live to maturity.
Okay, okay. So they were really,
that was,
I mean, that was like, and this was the ones that had the pasteurized milk and the cooked food.
Well, they had sweetened condensed milk. I know when I was a little girl, I used to love to make cheesecake out of a little can that was full of this thick, sweetened milk that I love to eat with a spoon.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
It's delicious. But that was what they fed the cats, and that's what happened. And
okay.
I can't say that I am happy about what I did back then as a result of finding that out.
Well, I think we all can say that.
Well,
That compared to the kittens that were on all raw diet, the ones on the raw diet thrived and did well, didn't they? They didn't have any problems with fertility. Is that correct?
Not much. No, they just seemed to go on as usual. And that was back in the 1930s. Now, I'm assuming there were some chemicals back then, but maybe not as many as today.
So this would explain a lot about our fertility problem in America today, and, you know, a lot of people with the miscarriages, and our kids are so sick, and that would help to explain a lot of things.
It would be the start of it, for sure.
Yeah, for
now
sure.
Now they're finding out in research. I have been listening to the research work of Dr. Warren Porter, University of Wisconsin, and he was telling about research where, I think they did it, actually, I believe they did, where they literally went in and looked at how many, they looked at the uterus of a mouse after she'd had her babies, and they could see where different mice had been aborted or reabsorbed during the process, so they were able to count the number of babies that actually never made it, that were conceived but didn't make it. And he talks a lot about infertility and miscarriage to do with the pesticides, and herbicides, too. It's very troubling. I have now lost a grandchild of my own among my children, and many other women in my age group have the same situation. They've lost grandchildren, and it's very sad. The parents are having a really hard time.
And I'm sorry to hear about that, but it's a really tough time for, I mean, it's like the best of times and worst of times in so many ways. Nowadays we have all these conveniences and stuff, but yet our health is worse than I think it's ever been, at least in our lifetime. And
I have to say that the 1 in 2 numbers that Dr. Stephanie Senef talks about, because she also talks about children not being healthy today, and that, you know, 1 in 2 are just not healthy. And I have to say, I have 2 beautiful granddaughters, and I have 1 little granddaughter who was born and died 28 days later, about a year and a half ago. And then another baby has been lost. So I have to say that my own family is, so far the numbers have not changed for us. It's very sad.
Yeah, it is sad. Well, let's talk about the 4 pillars of support that our bodies need. And we talked about this before the other day. So let's talk about that. Let's start with the nutrient density about our food. And I know we've touched on this some, but our food is just not as healthy as it used to be 50 years ago, and I've talked about this before on the show. Even organic is not as nutrient dense as it used to be 50 years ago. And also, they've altered the wheat, and they're altering the milk. And let's talk about that just briefly. What are they doing to our food?
The milk?
Let's talk
The wheat. I can certainly talk about the wheat.
Yeah, let's talk about the wheat just briefly. You said that
they actually changed
the wheat in the 50s a little bit.
Well, when I was first looking at GMOs, I like to listen to both sides of the story. So I got some books that were pro-GMO, and I wanted to read what they had to say, and I got the others too. But there was one book called Mendel in the Kitchen that I read, and just a few pages into the book, the author was talking about the fact that somewhere in the 50s or 60s, I'm not sure just when, they were using chemical mutation and also nuclear radiation. They were actually nuking the seed wheat to alter it, to hybridize it. And
why were they doing that?
Why did they
need to do that? To commercialize it or something?
It's probably to do something that they wanted to make it easier to grow. I know that they were making shorter wheat back then. I'm not sure if that's what they did to that particular strain, but she clearly says that they, you know, what they did was violent to the wheat.
Yeah.
And that it was It was nuclear radiation and chemical mutation.
Wow.
And she said, and the author at that point said, and we've been fine since then. And I went and looked at the date that her book was published, and it was 2004. Well, in 2003, Alessio Fasano had published his research on celiac disease, and that really changed the course of American life. I think the Europeans got it back in the 70s. It took us a little bit longer to get it. But I just thought, how can you say that now when it's very, very clear that people are having a lot of trouble with wheat? And there's a very interesting study that the military had saved a lot of blood samples from their healthy soldiers back in the 60s. And so some of the gluten syndrome researchers asked if they could test that blood for just a couple of antibodies to gluten. And now some of the better labs are testing for a lot more antibodies and finding a lot more cases of gluten syndrome as a result. But back, you know, when they did this, they were just looking for two antibodies. But they tested for those antibodies, and they found a far, far lower level of antibodies to gluten in those military samples than they find in the general healthy public today, or what's considered healthy.
Yeah.
Still walking around. But the point being is that absolutely just the incidence of gluten syndrome, of which celiac disease is the most well-known subset, kind of a small subset really, but it's the most well-known, it's much incredibly higher than it ever was back in the 60s. And, of course, it was right back around then that they were doing all this work on the wheat, and I don't think we've gotten healthier since then.
No, I don't either.
No.
But now, are they changing? They're still changing. Have they completely changed the wheat to GMO now? I know in recent years they were going to do that. Have they done that yet? Or
that depends on who you talk to. Some of my farmer friends tell me that they have seen GMO wheat in the catalogs, and yet other spokespersons for the GMO-free community are saying, no, officially it hasn't come out yet. They've got it. They're trying to get it through, but it hasn't officially come out as officially GMO using the methods that they're using today, which, from what I understand, is the gene gun and enzyme splicing. Maybe there's other methods now, but the method that was done back in the 50s and 60s was a different method. It was nuclear radiation and chemical mutation. So officially, I'm told by the GMO-free, let's get rid of it expert, supposedly wheat is not yet GMO, but really it has been altered very violently, according to that one author. And
since the 50s, you're saying?
Since the 50s. So that, to me, that sort of helped me understand, well, why people were getting so sick, and it took a long time for the United States to figure out why these people were so sick. I mean, it's very well known that people who just got diagnosed with celiac disease, which is just a small subset, but it's the first one they recognized, it's well known that they would see 11 different doctors before anybody might have a clue what was wrong with them, and many people, they never did find out. They just ended up really sick all their life, or they died early.
Yeah, yeah. So the wheat is really, because it's been altered, it's been causing for years a lot of gut issues, and we see that getting worse and worse in our society
today. Well,
it's
always been a little bit, it's always been a little bit hard to digest. I think researchers will tell you that it's always been a little bit of a difficult protein to digest, and you'll find isolated cases of gluten syndrome type symptoms and so on way back to 100 years after Jesus died.
Uh-huh.
That's when it was first written of in the literature, and then you find cases of it all the way through, but it's just very, very sporadic. But people were already having trouble with wheat before they made the changes in the 50s.
Okay.
But there's also some opinion that it was also the carbs in the wheat that were causing trouble. People couldn't break down either. So it gets complicated. But
yeah.
Certainly after, in the last 50 years, things have just gone out of control.
Yeah, especially.
And I have no doubt that the pesticides and the chemicals on the wheat itself are also not helping at all.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, you add all the toxins and everything in, you know, it just complicates things. And we've I know we've talked about the four pillars of support here the other day, and we talked about, you mentioned nutrient density. You need to, you know, make sure you have clean food and it's healthy food, and natural fats, toxin reduction, and food intolerances. And these are some things that people have to pay attention to. You know, in other words, people are getting so weak and so sick that we can't just say, well, I'll just eat right and exercise and that'll be all. That a lot of times now, especially if you're real sick, and if you're not that sick, yeah, you may can do that. But if you're really sick, have several health challenges, it's not that simple anymore. And I want to talk about that just for a little bit before we end here. We're coming to the, toward the end of the show. But I want to talk about how that we're so sick and it's not simple. In a lot of cases, to turn things around. And the sicker we are, and what I'm seeing and other people are seeing is that it's taking a lot longer, and I know I've mentioned this before, but it takes a lot longer and a lot more work to turn the tide around and to bring people back from the edge because we're so sick. And so let's talk about that, you know, that you have to tweak things. It's not just one diet, and it's not, you know, you have to pay attention if you have leaky gut, and it throws the scenario off depending on what's going on with you. And that's why you need to get a really good functional or integrative or holistic doctor to go to that can look at the whole body and look at what all is going on so that he can help bring you back to health. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, when you talk about toxin reduction, that is a big subject because part of that, and we're also going to touch on natural fats here, another really, really basic toxin to take out of the diet immediately is trans fats. And to realize how to read the labels and realize that not only are the partially hydrogenated oils a problem, but also the omega-6 fats, that would be the grain oils like corn, cotton, canola, soy, they're just so processed, plus they're GMO and full of pesticides today. And they're very fragile. They can't be heated too high at all before they start having problems. And so the trans fats and the overprocessed oils are a big deal. Processed foods in general add to the toxic load because if you take corn, for instance, and you make it into corn flakes, the heat and pressure that they use in that process makes more toxins in the food that weren't there before. Obviously the pesticides, and then you look at the infections and the parasites that seem to live in this whole soupy mess of garbage that's going on in our bodies, and they put out toxins as well. So it gets a little complicated. Heavy metals, my family doesn't see much aluminum foil in our house. We don't use cans. We don't use aluminum pans. This is all because we've been instructed by doctors to stay away from these things. So also the mercury amalgam fillings in our mouth are toxic. Some of the plastic fillings are too. You kind of have to test yourself to find out which ones your body likes the best. So these are all pieces of the puzzle. Another big deal is plastics. A lot of plastics have endocrine disrupting chemicals in them. That means that they will affect your hormones, your thyroid, your testes and ovaries, your pituitary, and all the glandular system.
Yeah, and there's so many plastics in our environment. Plastic water bottles and drink bottles, just plastics are everywhere.
Yeah, they are, and you can't completely get rid of them. I have tried really hard. I knew I couldn't get rid of all of them, but I have tried where I could, and certainly tried to get them out of the kitchen. And food comes in plastic that I can't avoid. But I try to do what I can, because it's the low-dose exposures that seem to cause these gender altering effects that we all want to avoid. And so I have really tried pretty hard to get rid of the plastics where I could.
Yeah, and I think it's important here we don't want to overwhelm people. Yes, we do have a lot of issues and all, but just start with something simple and just gradually working on things to clean up the diet, to get rid of the, you know, more plastics. But don't feel overwhelmed, because life is overwhelming enough. And when you don't need more stress on you. And that's another piece of the puzzle. See, these are just physical things we're talking about. We're not talking about the voltage of the body that can be affected. affected. We're not talking about the electromagnetic frequencies from the cell phones and cell towers and satellites. You know, we're not talking about all that. Then we're talking about not talking about the stress and the emotional issues. So it's a lot of things, and you can easily feel overwhelmed, but don't do that. Just you know, we're just trying to inform you, and you just start gradually, a little at a time, and making a few changes. And when you do that, it will add up, and every little bit helps. And we don't want to add more stress to your life, so I did want to mention that.
That's a good point, and I think one little line tagline that's come up in the last few years has been just eat real food, and that makes it nice and simple.
Yeah,
and just keep it simple. You know, just
and
keep
that's
simple.
Some of the best advice is just keep it simple. And we need to try to, you know, simplify our life as best we can, but especially in this area of health and all, because simple is good, and it's good. And usually simple is a lot less stressful also.
Absolutely. So, yes, absolutely. I didn't talk about the electrosmog and the emotional. There's spiritual, emotional. There's forgiveness. There's gratitude.
Yeah, there's tons of different issues like that,
If we can practice gratitude, if we can practice forgiveness, if we can look at the bright side and be thankful that we have the blessings that we have every day, that will make such a difference in our ability to cope with life in general.
It will. And I've talked about some of these things on some other shows that people can, you know, go back and listen to also. You just can't get everything in one show. And that's what I want to do, is just try to get a little bit at a time and just help, you know, educate people and help us all to just try to gradually change things. Because I'm not perfect and you're not perfect. No, none of us are perfect in this stuff. It's too much and we're so busy. But like I said, you know, just, you know, take what you can and what, you know, sounds good to you, do your own research and just start making a few changes. And we're coming up on the end of the program, and I've really enjoyed the show today. I think it's been very informative. Is there anything that you would like to say in closing, Olive?
Well, you know, I've had this thing, you brought it up at the beginning, that I have it on my email. Let me just pull it up so that I can be sure I say it right. Our children's bodies are sitting on our dinner plates today. Someday they may look in the mirror and grade our choices if they are able to speak.
Yeah, that's very sobering. Very sobering.
It is.
Well, again, thank you, Olive, for taking your time out to discuss these issues with us and for all the research you've done. And thank you for listening. And remember to download the America Out Loud's new iPhone app. Tell your friends to download it, and you can listen to any of the podcasts, to this podcast, The Misdiagnosed Life, any of the other podcasts on the America Out Loud Network. This is Beverly Butler, and as always, take care. Until next time.